Hello and welcome to today's webinar on addressing the gap in DEI in the AM workplace with me, Sophie, and Sarah Gerke. So this is the last webinar in our salary survey webinar series with Alexander Daniels Global, where we do some deep diving into the data from our annual salary survey report. And this time round, we're going to be honing in on the data from our spotlight topic on diversity, equity, and inclusion in the additive manufacturing workplace. If you haven't seen or heard about our report before, you can head over to the Alexander Daniels Global website and you can get a free download of the report from there sent straight to your inbox. So let's go ahead with some more in-depth introductions for today's webinar. So as I mentioned, my name is Sophie. I am the digital marketer at Alexander Daniels Global, and I also wrote and curated this year's edition of the salary survey report. If you haven't heard about Alexander Daniels Global before, I'll just give a brief description of what it is that we do there. So we are a specialist recruitment company that focuses exclusively on the additive and advanced manufacturing industries. And we've been operational since 2015, where we've been recruiting AM talent from production to the C-suite across a very large variety of companies in the industry, even working with companies in vertical industries. Today, I'm very lucky to be joined by Sarah Gerke, who also wrote a fantastic contribution to our salary survey report this year. And that's why I'm so excited to have her here, because I'm very much looking forward to continuing the conversations that we started, I think, a year ago now when I started sharing some of the data with you from the reports. And when Sarah is not looking at DEI data from us, she is the head of DEI at Women in 3D Printing, and she's also on the board of directors there. And when she's not doing that and dedicating her time to that organization, she is also on the, she is the senior director at Nexa 3D, focusing on strategic communications and ecosystems there. So I'll just hand over to you, Sarah, so you can give a bit more of an in-depth introduction to yourself and all the fantastic work that you do in the industry.
Thank you, Sophie. It's really fun to be here today, and I'm looking forward to this conversation. And welcome to everyone joining us live and later on in the recording of today's session. We're looking forward to having this as a conversation with you, so we really hope you'll participate and continue to reach out. So as Sophie very nicely said, I'm Sarah Gerke. I've been in the 3D printing industry since 2014. I spent about 7 years on the media side, and it was during that time that I became deeply, deeply involved with women in 3D printing. When the organization officially became a nonprofit in 2018, I was one of the first to join the board of directors. There were three of us at the time. We're six now. So we've absolutely grown quite hugely over the last couple of years, which is really great to see. And we'll get a little bit more as well into what that means for us organizationally. But after leaving the media side of the industry and having run my own editorial services company focused solely on additive manufacturing for several years, in October of 2021, I joined Nexa 3D. And so now I'm on the inside of the industry, and it's a really fun place for me to be for the first time. And there I am our senior director of strategic communications and ecosystems. And the nice thing about my job is no one knows what I do. So it's a lot of communications, it's a lot of talking, but what I really hone in on deeply with my team is diversity within our team, working with women in 3D printing. Sustainability. We've joined the AMGTA, the Additive Manufacturers Green Trade Association. And also on the sustainability side, we've partnered recently with Forest Nation out of the UK, and we're now planting a forest in Tanzania. So we're really looking to walk this walk. And I also had our work in government policy, as we've recently joined the Additive Manufacturing Coalition. And I personally have joined their board of advisors. So basically, that is to say, I do a lot in the industry, and I try to do the things that make a difference, not just for 3D printing as an industry, but for our world, for our Earth, in terms of sustainability, and really for the people who live on this world, which is why diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, is so important to me, You'll notice, and we'll talk about the fact that there aren't as many women in the industry as there are men, and those figures become even more skewed when we get away from the gender binary. And then when we talk about people of color and all of the other dimensions of diversity, there are about 47, so maybe we won't touch on quite all of them. It's the industry doesn't look today like the world outside does. So my big drive is getting it to look more like that world and reflect the world in which it operates. And that's what we're really doing at Women in 3D Printing. That's what I'm personally looking to drive with my new co-chair in DEI, Lisa Block, who is remarkable. And I'm very fortunate to have such a fantastic, strong-willed leader to work alongside, in addition to everyone else on the Women in 3D Printing team. And Sophie, you know, I'm so grateful for all of the work Alexander Daniels Global has been doing and the increasing focus that your team have been placing on DEI in salary surveys over the last few years. So why don't we start getting into it a little bit and
what
you all found?
Thank you. Yeah, no, thank you for sharing that. I'm quite blown away, as I'm sure our listeners are, by all of the responsibilities you've taken on your shoulders. And it's quite a mission to, you know, kind of get that representation in the industry increased. So yeah, that's fantastic to hear. Great. So just before we get started, I'll explain about the structure of the next hour. So we've got four key areas that we will be looking to cover. They will be on the agenda today. We've got, to what extent does DEI play a role in today's workplace? So that's looking a little bit about kind of where it's come from and how it's come to the forefront of the minds of the people in the industry. And I'm sure Sarah will have some bits of information to share on that. Then we'll move on to the perceptions of AM talent versus employers on DEI in the workplace, where we'll throw in some data from the salary survey report from ADG. And then we'll move on to how DEI strategies support and also challenge the AM workplace. And I think this topic is particularly important, mostly because, you know, people don't expect it to be so easy to change from one day to the next, implementing new strategies and procedures in a workplace. So yeah, I've been looking forward to talking about that one. And then hopefully we'll close off the session with some tips for improving diverse hiring strategies and DEI strategies in the workplace. So as Sarah mentioned before, this is a discussion today. So there is a Q&A feature. It should be open as a panel on the side of your screens. If it's not, if you navigate to the top of the screen where you're looking now, there should be an option that says Polly. Click on that and it'll open up our Q&A panel. There is the option to ask anonymous questions there. So we really encourage you to just get involved in the discussion, ask any questions, and we'll feed them into the conversation. Fantastic. So let's get started then with the first topic for today. So the first topic being, to what extent does DEI play a role in today's workplace? If I start off setting the scene with a bit of data from the salary survey report, interestingly enough, we actually found that 40% of respondents to the survey this year, they said that DEI is a topic of conversation in the workplace. But on the flip side, that's 60% of people who were either unaware of any DEI conversations happening in the workplace or who said that it just wasn't a topic of conversation. I mean, on its face, it doesn't look like a lot, 40% of respondents saying that about their workplaces. So, Sarah, I'm just wondering, could you maybe shed some light on why and how DEI has become a topic of conversation and where we are now in terms of adoption of DEI across the industry?
So I think the interesting thing is, especially when we talk about DEI in the workplace, we have to start by building a business case for it. And I, ever the idealist, want to just say, be good people. Be good people to be good people. And that is not enough. Because we do live in a capitalist world and we need to recognize the realities of that. And we're all here to do business. You know, it's not school. It's not public school where we're here to learn together and just join. It's not gathering at the coffee shop to have a chat with people. It is doing business. We do need to keep that in sight. And the fact that teams have goals and those goals are measured in metrics and KPIs, they're captured. Success is a tangible thing. And so saying be a good person doesn't necessarily carry a lot of weight when you put it in those terms. So you have to say that having a diverse team directly impacts your team's performance, your team's innovation, therefore your product innovation, therefore your product successes, therefore your profits. And boards of directors like to hear that profits can be on the rise. So we do have lots of statistics from research companies like McKinsey that have spent years looking into this, and we are trying to dig more deeply as an AM industry into these stats with ADG, with your help, and now that Women in 3D Printing has announced a strategic partnership with SME, we'll be using their resources as well to really dig into what this can look like. But you can see that it's, 2x more innovative, 4x more profitable, 6x. You can put those metrics to it and really quantify the fact that having a more diverse team, having more women and people of color in leadership roles directly correlates to higher profitability, better performance, better market reception. And, when we're talking about how candidates perceive this in the workplace, we have to look at how companies present themselves. Candidates are looking for that. And I think we can all agree that here in 2022, the hiring is really the candidates' game. It's they who are running it. We've
Definitely.
had the great resignation. We've
Yeah.
had the difficulties of COVID. We've seen so many companies unfortunately have to shutter operations.
Yeah.
And workers have more of a choice, and that means they have more of a voice. And people, it's maybe overstated, but never stated enough at the same time. People don't quit jobs, they quit bosses. And so
Yes.
if you create a workplace where people want to work not just for you, but with you, that's how you grow. I've seen my team at Nexa 3D more than double, over the last year. I'm only on since October, but the team I work on directly has gained 7 people since I joined.
Okay.
And when I was the second person officially on that team, that's pretty huge growth. And, some people came and said, I wanted to talk to this company because you're working there and you were enthusiastic. And so using your people as your spokespeople is also important. If you're enthusiastic about what you do, I want to work with you, and the places I want to work are the places I don't feel like I have to hide myself, anything about myself. I keep my personal life personal, but at the same time, welcome to my office. It's in my house.
Yeah.
I've worked remotely the entire time I've been in this industry since 2014, but now is when I feel like I don't need to dance around the fact that my office is in my home. I can say I work remotely, but now I can acknowledge it's my home. My
Yeah.
office is directly below my 2-year-old son's bedroom. And so when he's home in the afternoons after school, it can be loud and I'll be on a Zoom and apologize for, footsteps or very shrill toddler screaming. Or when I point and you see that I have tattoos, I don't feel like I have to hide those. Feeling like I can bring myself and be open about the fact that this is my home office and it's where I'm most productive means that I found an environment where I can be successful, and
So I
sharing
guess,
that story is important. Yeah.
excuse me. Yeah, no, I guess that's really the I in DEI, isn't it? It's the companies allowing their staff to feel really that they can just be themselves, regardless of who they are, where they work, what they do, whether they work from home remotely or whether they go into the office every day. And that's something really interesting that's come out of the whole COVID issues and working from home, companies needing to transition into that. Now we're seeing kind of a workforce that is more interested in and more geared towards a hybrid kind of solution or working exclusively from home. And companies have had to kind of, adjust to that as well, even post pandemic. And that's what I like about, especially about the DEI thing. It's the acceptance of and the recognition as well of kind of what an individual, regardless of who they are, can bring to the table. So that's fantastic. But in terms
And we
of
have to, Sophie, we have to see that as an opportunity too, because it means as the hybrid or remote workplace is becoming more common, that means you take the limits off of your talent, right? You can suddenly
Exactly.
work with thousands more people because you're not limited to that geography when it's the people who don't need to be hands-on
Yeah.
every single day. Obviously, we have engineers, designers,
Yeah.
people in shipping and receiving who need to be on site to physically move things along to design products and get them
Yeah.
out into the world. And you have those of us who need, a desk, a computer, and an internet connection, and even the desk can be negotiable. I've
Yeah,
been very productive
exactly.
from airport lounges, from
Yeah.
an airport just with my laptop on my chair or on my lap or on my phone before a flight takes off and getting things done.
Yeah.
But when my colleagues are spread across all four time zones in the US, not to mention team members in Europe, not to mention resellers in Asia, not to mention, it's really removing limits. And that, I think, is what we need to focus on today when we talk about the evolving workplace.
Yeah, perfect. So then, in terms of the adoption of this into the industry, what are you seeing? Are you seeing that it's accelerating? Are you seeing it stagnating? What have you noticed in terms of how companies, especially, are reacting to adopting DEI?
I think we're in such an interesting time right now. I remember growing up, everyone said, "Oh, we're studying history. Wouldn't it have been amazing to live it?" And here we are living
We
history,
are.
and it's more stressful, I think, than any of us had anticipated a couple of decades back. Joining the industry, I thought we were living history by watching this next industrial revolution, but that's not all it is it?
No.
So, given everything that's happening right now, and we need to be able to address those things, there is still a pandemic. We talk a lot about the post-pandemic world. The pandemic hasn't ended. I had COVID 2 months ago. I brought it home from an industry event, as did many people. There was another industry event this past weekend, and I know dozens who brought COVID home from that. We're still in it, we're still
Yeah.
in a pandemic. It's hard. Personally, professionally, it impacts companies. It obviously impacts supply chain. And then we get to supply chain. Sometimes a ship goes cattywampus and the world loses out on what that ship was bringing. And not just that ship, but every ship behind it in the canal. And
Yeah.
so we find that when we limit ourselves to the Suez Canal or to one narrow shipping route, to one narrow way of thinking,
Yeah.
one thing gone astray has this massive, massive domino effect. And that's a lesson we could absolutely take everywhere else because we look at digital manufacturing, additive manufacturing, manufacturing 2.0, 4.0, whatever we're calling it all these days.
Yeah.
The benefit is localization, is removing the constraints of traditional supply chains and reliance on shipping and logistics, and being able to design in San Diego and print in Singapore and get the same part quality when you have a qualified process
Yeah.
that you get at home base, in California, and be able to say, "Yes, we are holding the same part because I sent it to you." I mean, if we all remember half a decade ago, there were the headlines about a wrench being emailed to the International Space Station. And, when you say it now, it sounds ridiculous, but that was cool. That was from the first 3D printer on the ISS.
Yeah.
And it's no longer version one, and neither is the industry. But that's all kind of the long way about of saying when we look at where the world is today, and employers having more of that say in their work environments, it's so important. I would not want to go work for a team that made me come into the office every day. I have a toddler. I have a home life. I have a very productive workflow that I've established over the course of 8 years. I know I'm a responsible adult who can do my work from my remote office. And I have a toddler, and we're living in a pandemic, and my parents both have compromised health and lung issues, and I cannot bring COVID to my parents who are in their 70s. I did not want to bring COVID home to my son, but unfortunately I did. He did get sick and it was terrible, and he is now, healthy. We made it through. We were very fortunate. but we have all of these concerns and they weigh on us, you know. And then that's before we have things like Roe versus Wade being overturned, which in the US is not something we can ignore.
No.
When our very rights are being questioned, that comes into the workforce. I mean, I think it was 100%. Yesterday I tweeted, you know, like, I don't know how to interact with social media or with the world right now. Like, I don't know how to approach this. I want to focus on my work, but I've lost human rights. Mm-hmm. And my friends might lose further rights. People in my sphere might lose more rights. Mm-hmm. And they might be told their marriages are invalid before long. You know, that's not, we can't ignore the fact that those things happen.
Sure.
With everything that happened 2 years ago outside of the pandemic, we can't afford to ignore that systematic racism is alive and real and horrible and impacting lives and livelihoods and well-being and sanity of those around us. And when it comes to bringing that to work, it's because people have to bring themselves to work.
Yeah, it's recognizing that fact that the individual, you can't separate yourself from the home and the work. You are the same person going between the two places. And, you know, it's having that human approach to your employees in the workplace as well. Which brings me on to the next point, actually, you know, discussing kind of the perceptions of the professional versus the employer on DEI strategies in the workplace. Because this was something where that was, you know, there was an overwhelming difference, hence the name of today's webinar, you know, the gap in DEI in the AM workplace. As you could probably guess from the, you know, the talent side, you know, there was a lot more support for it than unfortunately from the employer side. And that's what we're going to look at now. Just looking at the employer side then, the data from the salary survey report showed us that 46% of employer respondents said that it was neither a high priority nor a low priority to implement, you know, DEI strategies in the workplace. And then a further 29% of respondents actually said that they didn't have any procedures in place at all in the workplace. So we see that it's not necessarily you know, a priority, I want to say, for the organization itself at the moment. It's not to say that it couldn't be in future. But then if we look a little bit closer then at those numbers, of those who said that they did have procedures in place at work, only 8% of them said that they felt that those procedures has been very successfully implemented, versus 77% of respondents who said that they were neither successful nor unsuccessful. So I think the common theme that we notice, if we just look at purely on the numbers, is that there is a lot of ambivalence there towards, you know, implementing DEI into a workplace from the organization perspective. And that can be understood as well, I think. You know, the organization itself is more focused on surviving, which is revenue, you know. But what I want to get to today is actually how, as well, DEI is linked to revenue. And we can talk a little bit more about that part a little bit later. But yeah, I just wanted to get your thoughts on those numbers then. Like, where does this ambivalence come from in your opinion?
I mean, it's such a huge thing. And we have this conversation a lot at Women in 3D Printing, because people come to us and say, what about men in 3D printing? And, you know, the thing we need to focus on, it's the same for women in 3D printing, for Black Lives Matter, for any of these things that really highlight a minority group of any stripe, you know?
Yeah.
No one is saying other people don't matter. No one is saying men in 3D printing don't matter. No one is saying white lives don't matter. All lives don't matter. That pushback is really a straw man argument, and it's a weak one, honestly. Well, it's not a pie, you know? It's not, if we say that women deserve more of this pie, there's less left for men. And Diana's left a really great comment in the chat, and Diana's another brilliant leader on this topic within her team, and I so admire what you do, Diana. She points out that measuring progress and success is such a challenge with such a sensitive topic when there's so much work to be done, and the progress never feels like enough. And that, I agree. I absolutely agree. It's always an uphill climb, but some of the, thanks, Diana, some of the pushback, you know, comes from people feeling like because we say let's pay attention to this group, they're saying that our group doesn't matter. that heterosexual cis white men don't matter. No one has ever said that. You know, okay, maybe there's a meme out there, but we'll ignore the memes. And if that's where you're getting your politics, we need to have a different talk.
Yes.
By emphasizing that some people matter, we're not at all saying that others don't. And I think that's where some of it comes in. And when you get pushback from business leaders, from CFOs, from people whose business is that bottom line, the thinking needs to be, you know, a stronger team feels more comfortable. When you feel comfortable, you can focus on your work. Women in 3D printing hosted a panel last summer focused on Stop Asian Hate. Right. And that we saw a lot of issues directly facing the AAPI community. And these are our colleagues. And several of them who shared their stories, and the recording is available from Women in 3D Printing's YouTube channel. Please check it out. It was a brilliant discussion. Our colleagues were spat on their way to work.
Wow.
And you cannot literally have someone spit on you during your commute and not take that to the end of your commute.
No.
That is something that happened, and we need to acknowledge, and we need to check on our people and not make that their issue. It's not for them to face alone. Mm-hmm. And the biggest thing is making people feel like they're not alone, that they are supported, and that when they do end their commute, however difficult the commute was, that they've come someplace safe.
Yeah.
They've come someplace where they're accepted, where they're honored as a human person, and where they know that their value on a team isn't as a diversity hire, which another very incredible colleague in this industry faced recently. They were attacked on Twitter and said, no wonder your company stock is plummeting with these diversity hires. And it's bunk. It really is. This person is an incredibly qualified, brilliant, brilliant engineer, and so technically capable. And they are a person of color. And they're part of the LGBTQ plus community. And they're, you know, they are in these minority groups. And they also are working on their second master's degree, you know?
Yeah.
And there's just so much. Because someone is diverse,
yeah,
it doesn't mean that's why they were hired. They are qualified. They're great at their jobs.
It's recognizing that. I think diversity, perhaps, for a lot of people is a label that is placed out there. And it needs to, we need to realize that it's more than that, actually. You know, yes, okay, it's good to diversify a workforce, and it's good to, you know, have more representation in a business, because at the end of the day, when you are a business, you're serving people, and people are not just, you know, cookie cutter cutouts of each other. We are all completely different. So it's good to have those different perspectives and points of view and backgrounds and ways of thinking. And I've completely lost my train of thought now, and it was going somewhere very special. No, the point that I want to bring back is, yeah, so it's a label for a lot of people, and it's realizing that, you know, especially when we're talking about diverse hiring, it's not about just meeting a quota, and it shouldn't be about just meeting a quota. It's about, you know, recognizing the merits that somebody different, you know, if you want to say like that, from your usual workforce might actually be able to bring to the table. And, you know, have the anecdote that you just came with, the stories that you just told, really, you know, backs up the data then as well, because when we look at the professional side, the talent side of the perceptions of DEI in the workplace, we actually had an overwhelming 51% who found it very important or important to work for a company that supports DEI. That's versus the numbers we saw for, you know, the employers, which, you know, the contrast is completely different. And, you know, in the meantime, of those 51%, actually only 20% of our respondents said that they were satisfied with the way that their companies were approaching DEI in the workplace. And actually, I've got a slide that I can just share on that to just give you a visual of the data that we collected in our salary survey report. And if I just scroll down here, this is what we found. So the question was on the advantages of promoting DEI in the workplace. And it just gives you a visual on the difference in the perceptions. So the employers are the gray color and the employees are the green color. And if we just take the first point, which was encourages innovation and creativity as an advantage of promoting DEI in the workplace, which are those different perspectives that we were just talking about, we can see that 74% of employee respondents felt that that was actually one of the biggest advantages of promoting DEI in the workplace versus just 15% of employers. So, you know, seeing these kinds of numbers and the issue put into perspective like this, what would you say on that?
I think we need to pay attention to, and by we, I mean industry leaders need to pay attention to those numbers and what they're saying and what they mean. And the fact that look at these, you know, look at these figures, look at what they mean. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go ahead and share a slide myself. So
yeah, you don't mind. I'll just remove that one.
So this is from a presentation that my colleague, Kristen Mulheron, who I work with at Nexus 3D and at Women in 3D Printing. We gave it Rapid just this May. Mm-hmm. So this information is from Deloitte. And when I was talking about those 2X, 3X, 6X numbers, these are those numbers.
Yeah.
So these are how we can see the case for an inclusive climate. And when we look at what this means, this is what you show to the CFO. This is what you show to the decision makers, not just the best candidates are paying attention to company culture and they have big things going on. But when we pay attention to those and we attract those best candidates, when we retain those best candidates and build that best team, twice as likely to meet or exceed financial targets, three times as likely to be high performing, six times more likely to be innovative and agile, eight times more likely to achieve better business outcomes.
Which is incredible.
I don't know how else to lay it out, you know, and when we talk about this, you know, we see some of why we need to talk about it in this industry and talking about what the salary survey that your team put out brings in. And one of the stats I really also want to highlight about why we talk about women in particular being underrepresented, the high end estimate is about 15% women in this industry. And I think when we look at the world, we can agree that there are more than 15% women in the population or more than 15% non-heterosexual cis males in the population. And, you know, that is rising. And over the 8 years I've been in this industry, I have less and less and less frequently been the only woman in the room. Mm-hmm. I'm presenting on two webinars today, and in both, I'm only speaking with women and incredibly qualified, brilliant women, Sophie.
Thank you.
So it is a wonderful thing that we can really lead these conversations and have them together. And, you know, that it is people who are qualified to have these talks and to discuss them. And the fact that your team are bringing in more DEI data to your salary surveys every year is showing there's a call for this. You know, people mm-hmm. want to see this. They are asking for these data. And so also, you know, when we talk about what that actually means, this is the way that I like to break down what DEI means just while I've got the slides up.
Yeah.
Diversity, we can equate to being invited to the dance. I think we all remember prom or homecoming or the equivalents around the globe. Being invited to the dance, you know, it was a nice thing. Equity is being asked to dance. So that's more than just being there, being keen to be a wallflower, but actually being invited onto the dance floor is a big step, and it makes you feel like you're part of it. Inclusion is when you know the dance, when you know the music. So you invite me to a dance, you ask me onto the floor, and we do the Macarena. I am there with you. And the Macarena will now and forever be my example because I am a child of the 80s, 90s. So that's just where I am in life. And also when we talk about why companies in our industry need to talk about it, I hate woke. I think it's bunk. I think it's another kind of straw man thing and it's a little mm-hmm. bit too easy. It's the workforce.
Yeah.
It's not the woke force or the snowflakes or this or that. Like talking about the human people we work with should not be taboo. Wanting yeah. to function well together as a successful and productive team should not be taboo. It should not be woke or disparaged. It should be like, these are the people we work with. And so this is, again, from the presentation that Kristen and I gave at Rapid. So we looked a little bit about how AM companies specifically can address this, how we can all invest in these exercises. And I know this is an area we were going to discuss a little bit later, but again, I've just got slides up now, so here we are. I think the biggest thing we need to keep in mind is that it's not an HR exercise. It's not a learn it and leave it workshop where you leave everything you learned in the room where you learned it. You need buy-in from the top. You need attention from leadership. You need to actually invest in this and put your money where your mouth is. Train your people. Conduct focus groups. Listen to people. Take engagement surveys. Keep your finger on the pulse of your teams. That requires investment of time and money. Build in reports. Build it into your KPIs, into your metrics of success. And just really discover, what that all means for you. And so then, of course, we look into what Nexa specifically is doing so we can kind of move beyond that a little bit now.
No,
And
I
let's stop. Sure, I can stop sharing. There it is. There's the
There.
button.
No, I think those are really excellent points. And actually, Ronan here, he just dropped in a question that, is it possible to share these slides at all? He liked them so much, he wants to see more of them. Obviously, we will be sharing the recording with registrants after, and it will also be made available on YouTube in a few weeks' time. But I guess the question was for the slides specifically, if it's possible.
Yeah, and those are also available in the recording of the session that Kristen and I presented at Rapid. So I can share the link in the chat here to that session, and we can also, do what we can to get that link shared out as well. So in the chat now is the direct Vimeo link to
To
Kristen's
that.
and my session that has all of those
Perfect.
links. So that's about a 20-minute
Perfect.
chat just about why specifically a 3D printing company needs to invest in DEI today. So that's where my slides are, and I'm sure Sophie will be able to make her information and outlines available as well.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you so much, Sarah. No, there's just one point that I would like to add to that as well, which is something that we've suggested. We wrote a guide on the Alexander Daniels Global blog as well, kind of giving our best practice for promoting a diverse workforce and building a diverse workforce. And one thing as well, which we suggest, is giving team members decision-making authority on things that affect them. So if you're going to be implementing new procedures, new processes, open it, open a discussion about it with your team and get them involved, because the more you're involved in the decision-making process for things like that, the more likely you are to adopt it and to keep working on it because you feel a part of it. It's not like it's a trickle-down effect that somebody at the top is making a decision and saying, okay, from tomorrow, diversity. It needs to be accepted and adopted by everyone in the business.
And
And
I
we'll
think
talk.
we've heard sorry, Sophie,
No,
the
go for
popular
it.
phrasing, no decisions about me without me. And I think that's the thing for us all to keep in mind as well, that when we are looking to make decisions and investments that will impact our teams, have that team involved.
100%. It'll definitely make the difference. That coupled with the data you provided on kind of the financial and the performance impact on a business of implementing DEI across the business should be enough to convince the convince the big guys or gals. Let's put that out there. Great. Okay. So then I guess a good segue now would be to kind of focus on the topic of how DEI supports and challenges the workplace. We're obviously very pro getting it adopted and getting it out there into the world as the standard. But as I mentioned at the start of today's webinar, it doesn't come without its challenges, especially as it's something new for a lot of companies that they need to implement and get the team and the wider business on board with. So some things that organizations actually said through the salary survey that we conducted, some things that they said that they wanted to achieve with DEI practices were, you know, getting new ideas and approaches introduced into the business, having a more representational workforce for the reasons mentioned today, as well as others, I'm sure, you know, increasing cultural awareness, which I guess couples up with that having a more representational workforce. And then, of course, increased diversity in leadership, which is very important. And then increased productivity and profits, which links back to the slides that you just shared. But on the increased diversity in leadership, what kind of benefits would you say that actually has, and the positive impacts it has on a business?
Once again, you know, we can point to data from Deloitte, from McKinsey, that companies that have women in CXO positions on boards of directors are quantifiably more profitable. And that makes those companies, you know, just straightforwardly more successful. Companies are doing better when they have more diverse leadership. And, you know, it's not easy. It's not just, so recently, as another example, I'm on Twitter a lot. I spend a lot of time on Twitter. I'm not proud of it, but I do. There's an incredible 3D printing community there, and I like to just virtually hang out with people. And I help run our company social media, so I do spend some time on Twitter. But one of the big things I saw, it was at some point last year, I believe, United, the airline, put out a statement that they would be specifically recruiting more female pilots. And, you know, they put a number to it. And then by this date, they wanted at least 30% of their working pilot staff across their entire fleet to be women.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a wonderful thing. I read their statement, and, you know, beyond the tweet, which is obviously, you know, that big, they'd put out a full statement they linked to, and it was nuanced, well thought out, had action points, and was going about it well. Nuance is often lost on Twitter, or when you boil things down to 280
characters. Yeah.
And so the pushback was phenomenal of what, so you're only going to hire unqualified women just because they're women? And whoever's running the United account was doing a nice job saying, we never said unqualified. We're creating additional opportunities, and we guarantee every pilot in the cockpit will be a qualified, trained pilot with the proper credentials, the appropriate training, and the backing of, you know, the organization and awareness of how you make the big metal bird get in and stay in the air and then get safely back down. They phrased it better than that. That was just me. But, you know, even a company so big as United has these things that might be seen as missteps because of the way that it was put out or perceived, or just this gap. And there's always going to be pushback, or people assuming that more women, more people of color, more LGBTQ people, more people, you know, with physical disabilities, more people from, you know, on the autism spectrum, more people with limb differences, more people with, you name it. Again, we come back to about 47 dimensions of diversity.
Sure, yeah.
Look at any of that, you know. If you say, you know, this person is a diversity hire, they wanted more women, they wanted more this community, that community. Clearly they're not qualified. Why? Why is that the leap you make?
Yeah.
It's not in anyone's best interest, especially a company, especially one that literally risks people's lives if the people performing a job like piloting a commercial aircraft aren't qualified, that will kill people, you know?
Yeah.
I think they're very invested in having qualified people there. And I think all of the companies we work with are very invested in having qualified people, not a token on the team to be the one Black person in the group photo, you know, or to be this or to be that.
Of course. Sorry to interrupt. No, I completely agree with that. I think perhaps the question always comes because when it comes down to actually recruiting the talent itself. You know, it's not an uncommon question to get that. It's, you know, how do I go about attracting diverse professionals in the industry, given that we all already know that there is a talent shortage, as we keep going on about, within additive manufacturing. So you're trying to couple, you know, just finding the most suitable qualified hire, and then also trying to find suitable qualified hires that are, you know, that want to work for you, that are, you know, diverse, let's say, that, you know, maybe are they okay to relocate? Are they, you know, in the area? Are they qualified properly? You know, so suddenly you start playing with a lot more different variables, because you're trying to diversify the workforce. And I think that's where people, they find a lot of challenges. And I know you've answered some questions in previous webinars or events or talks about that. So I'm just wondering if you could maybe share now some tips that you have on how to actually reach that more diverse talent base.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the big goals that Women in 3D Printing DEI is working toward in the next couple of months is creating a toolkit for hiring managers and for companies to kind of have some bullet points that lay it out. You know, there isn't a playbook, there isn't an at a glance, there isn't, you know, a formula where you just plug these things in and suddenly, oh, you get all of the right things that you're looking for. So it's trial and error, and it is, it is a lot of figuring it out as you go and learning on the go. So we, again, have to incorporate that nuance in there. But there are very simple things that, you know, when you're creating a job description, that you can do from the very beginning. And one big part is paying attention to the pronouns you use. Because a lot of times we'll see a job description that says we're looking for an application engineer. In this role, he will be working with these teams and he will take on these responsibilities and da da da. Maybe don't say he. It's as simple as that. Sometimes you say she and you'll see that men still apply. Or it can be better and use the singular they. It's gender neutral and it's just a really quick, simple thing to do that, you know, there is kind of a playbook for. Just don't use gendered language, because that makes potential applicants feel like this role isn't for me.
Mm-hmm.
So there's looking at that. They're looking at things like the best advice I ever heard when I was going through my formal DEI training for HR through Cornell University last year was reduce the number of required qualifications in a job posting. Because we all see, you know, required, desired and ideally kind of mm-hmm. categories, and required is often really long, and it's this particular degree level in this particular field and then this many years of job experience and da da da. But if you take that out and move that more into desired, and required has to be able to work in this country where the job is posted.
Yeah.
Or, you know, things like that are actually non-negotiable. The need should be non-negotiable. Everything else can be wibbly. And I'm saying this as someone who came into 3D printing with degrees in theater and English and a minor in Spanish. And I'm talking bachelor's degrees. I don't have a master's. I don't have technical training. Goodness knows, I don't have a PhD in photopolymer chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I am qualified for my role. If I saw the job description, I might not apply for it, because I would be sitting there like, oh, my BA in theater
doesn't quite compare.
This. And yet by some circuitous route, and I've done plenty of events where I talk about my background and my foray into additive, there's room for me here, and not just room, but room to lead. And I've learned a lot as I go, and it's these softer skills, the development, the listening, the learning as you go, taking it in and being adaptable and being thirsty for it. You know, like at Nexa 3D, we often say, be humble, be hungry. And I really do think those are two of the biggest qualifiers that you need. But, you know, stepping that back when you're hiring, that can be really hard to see. And when you get resumes in, you know, how do you know comes in with an English degree who would be qualified to take on a role in this industry? And so there's a ton of nuance, a lot of discretion, and
Yeah.
it's not easy. That's why there's a playbook, and everyone formats their resume so differently that they might be brilliant and they just didn't, format it in such a way that it presents it.
Yeah.
And we need to be aware of certain factors that come into play, and data as well drives this, of course, because we have statistics that show that men, on the whole, typically respond to job descriptions where they meet about 60% of the preferred qualifications, whereas women tend to respond to job descriptions where they meet 90 to 100% of those.
I know that
And
feeling.
therefore, I require, having more in the required pool, you are immediately cutting out equally qualified candidates. So an equally qualified man and equally qualified woman will respond differently to different job postings, even when they would both perform equally well in the role. So just being aware of that and figuring out how to tailor a job listing so that it will attract more people to put themselves forward. And then paying attention, of course, to how you put out that job posting. Are you
Yeah.
working through a recruiter? What type of recruiter are you working with? What are their values?
That's
Are you putting
important.
it on LinkedIn, on your company page, on Indeed, on the Women in 3D Printing job board? By the way, there's a Women in 3D Printing job board. Where are you listing it? Because the places that you list it will get different hits. If you're looking for early career individuals, are you sharing the job listing with historically Black colleges and universities? We're seeing companies like Xometry investing into universities like Howard, and that's creating a new talent pipeline that will be incredibly powerful for our entire workforce, as well as for Xometry's, which is giving money to make that happen and to really foster that education and that opportunity very directly. And those are the kinds of things that are important. It's obviously a pipeline issue. It's obviously end to end.
Yeah.
And you can see the age at which STEM-themed classes, STEM-themed, STEM area classes and
Sure.
disciplines have a significant drop in female versus male students who continue on them when they become electives. And that usually comes in late middle to early high school when looking at US grade levels. And it's because more girls feel like this isn't for me, and they don't have role models, or they're not made to feel this way, or they get, wouldn't you rather sign up for home ec? Whereas a boy who might want to take home ec gets, wouldn't you rather take shop class, or wouldn't you rather take physics? And it's alienating being the only girl in a class, and it's off-putting, and you become the girl.
Yeah.
You become the token, whatever, and it's an end-to-end pipeline thing. So we need more, and Women in 3D Printing has the Next Gen program, which does focus on schools, and but we need to keep stepping back and look at how we're representing, what role models we're offering, who's speaking on a stage for a company. Just look at, is your company submitting 10 abstracts? Are all of those potential speakers white men? Maybe reconsider. Maybe look at who you're putting on stage, who else is qualified to speak. And sometimes you'll offer someone a speaking opportunity, and she, and usually it is a she, will say, I'm not comfortable on stage, I'm too nervous. Whereas you've heard her speak internally and you know she's brilliant and she just needs help, maybe some training. And whether that's more of an informal mentorship or signing up for Toastmasters, or looking into other learning opportunities, make sure that we get people these opportunities because it emphasizes the strength of the team that you've already built at the same time as creating role models. We have students coming to industry events all the time now. And, I've had young students come up to me after events and say, you really can do theater and 3D printing? That's so cool. I thought I had to pick. And so the fact that I, in some way, might impact that students, class choices in the coming year is huge to me. I've never taken anything, more personally gratifying.
Of
And
course.
so having role models and having role models of diverse educational backgrounds, ethnic, cultural, religious backgrounds, having someone who's comfortable sharing, when they're fasting, for religious reasons, paying attention to when we have events, if they're on major religious festivals. Will some of the people be fasting? Can we maybe not put a big buffet next to their booth? That's a little bit rude. Can we make more water available? how are we being mindful of the people celebrating with us? And, you know, they're just, it's a lot. It is a lot.
It is a lot because it's like you said, it's the whole, you know, process from education all the way through to the day you go for a job interview and how the organization approaches that interview process as well, the recruitment process. And there is a lot of work in between there that needs to be done. And since it is such a, you know, it's really grown in the last 5 years, especially DEI is a topic across the world in different industries. And so, you know, it is a learning curve for everyone trying to find ways of approaching it. And I think you've made some really good points, especially on the education side in schools, you know, how do you get more people involved with STEM subjects, etc., and then through to when you are advertising as well for jobs. But then when it comes to the actual interview process, I mean, we've got a few tips ourselves on what you can do when you are interviewing, because I think something that we're all guilty of, especially when we are going through a recruitment process looking for new hires, we can approach a recruitment process with kind of a preconceived idea of what the right fit looks like, what our ideal candidate looks like. And that's something I think that needs to be readdressed, because oftentimes you might find that what your ideal candidate looks like is somebody who matches the characteristics of those already in your team, whether that's on skills or, you know, where they come from, background, thoughts, etc. But actually what a right fit might be is the missing piece. So the person who is different from what you already have in your team, the one who will be able to bring that different perspective or different approach. And then integrating them as well and getting the team on board with, okay, it's okay to have different ideas and different approaches, because actually we might even get to a better solution by approaching all those different perspectives. So that's one thing that we would suggest when it comes to diverse hiring. Another thing that we like to suggest as well is keeping your recruitment process free from unconscious biases. You know, we all have them, that, you know, they're unconscious. We can't, you know, be always aware that we might be approaching a situation with the biases, but it's just trying to educate yourself on what they might be and finding ways, to address them. There are obviously unconscious bias training programs that people and companies, they can invest in, they can get their management and also team members involved in those. But, you know, keeping the thought of, you know, age biases, gender biases, ethnic or cultural origin biases, sexual orientation biases, disability biases, or any other characteristic that doesn't at all have anything to do with professional performance, you know, out of the equation. You know, that's one way that you can improve the recruitment process. Thank you, Diana, for that comment there. I'm sorry you have to go. I know we're running a bit close now to the hour mark, and I'm aware that we haven't actually covered all of the topics properly that we planned to. So I will just say quickly before other people start dropping off, you can find the data that I was going to share more about on the hiring challenges and so on in the salary survey report. And as I said at the start of today, it is a free download. So if you haven't already downloaded it, go to the website on alexanderdanielsglobal.com and get your free copy from there, so you can get all the data downloads. This is really a topic that we could go on and on and on and on and on about forever, as I can see. But I'm just aware of people's time now. If you want more information then on hiring approaches when it comes to diverse hiring, there is also a best practice guide on our website on alexanderdanielsglobal.com. So you can find that there in our blog section too, just to avoid me going on for the next hour and keeping you all here. But I think unless you've got anything else to add, Sarah, to all of the things that we've said today, maybe we should think about just closing off the conversation, as I'm aware you've got your next webinar to get to as well very soon.
I have, Sophie. So, you know, just thank you for not just being open to, but being proactive in this conversation. It is one that we need to keep having. And it's one I know I'm going to keep having, and there's a lot that we need to push. And one of the points I also want to bring up in another amazing talk I'd like to point people toward is from this past year's Type Conference for Women in 3D Printing. Lisa Block, who has since stepped up to become my co-chair in DEI, gave an incredible presentation regarding conflict and the beauty in disagreement. Absolutely worth a watch. If you've got about half an hour, check it out. Completely recommend it. And that's because one of the things we need to be conscious of is that diversity is disagreement. When there are people different from you, there is that awareness that you're coming from somewhere different, and different perspectives mean that they don't agree. Mm-hmm. And so finding the beauty in that and what it means to bring those two pieces that seem so disparate and so different and so far apart, bringing them together makes something stronger. Mm-hmm. And you can't make, you know, you can't have two of the same puzzle piece and expect to, you know, successfully build a puzzle. They need to be different. And there is this beauty in that. So definitely check out Lisa's talk. She's utterly brilliant. And in along those lines, I think we just need to keep lifting each other up, keep talking, keep cheering on one another and all of the work we see our collaborators and our competitors doing. Keep welcoming more people into the industry.
Yeah.
And keep pushing forward together to have this industry reflect the world in which it operates. And it is a conversation, again, that I want to be part of. So I do welcome anyone joining us today or in the recording to reach out. I'm very easy to find. Find me on LinkedIn or on Twitter using my name. It's Sarah Gerke, spelled just like it sounds. It's not, I know, but there's a handy cheat guide in the written things here. Sarah.Gerke@nexa3d.com, Sarah@womeninthreedprinting.com. If you can't find me at that point, like it's on you. I'm very easy to find. So let's keep talking about it. Let's keep pushing forward. And Sophie, I'm so excited to keep working with you and the team at ADG to keep talking about this, to keep surveying and figuring out what the data mean.
Likewise. Thank you so much for joining me today and giving your time for this discussion. And thank you to everyone who was able to join live. A recording will be made available of the event later today. Great. Thank you so much, Sarah. And yeah, wishing you a fantastic rest of the day.
And to you. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks. Bye-bye.